He is the new voice of talk radio, Alexander Danilov.
Good evening, all. Welcome back to Solutionsology Radio. You all know how much I love to talk about the topic of psychology, finance, markets, business, entrepreneurship, all that stuff. So I figured why not continue bringing it together and talk about something that I haven't really talked about too much, which is gullibility, although I have talked about in the past with scams and different things. But my guest tonight is Dr. Steven Greenspan. He is the author of The Analysis of Gullibility, Why We Get Duped and How to Avoid It. And there's a sequel to that coming up, which he's actually working on today. We'll talk about that later on. Dr. Greenspan, thank you so much for writing this book and for coming on the show tonight.
You're very welcome. Thank you for inviting me, Alexander.
Absolutely. So I was introduced to the book through, I believe it was a commodities book that I was reading, and I started doing some research. I'm like, this is really cool. I wish I'd known this sooner. Obviously, I would have had you on. But psychology is very, very interesting to me. It's very, it's something that we always try to figure out. We don't know why people do the things they do, why we do the things we do, and why we say the things we say sometimes. But in mass, when we start looking at different things and we start looking at people as a society as a whole throughout history, mm-hmm. and we start try to figure out what the heck was going through their heads. You mentioned the Trojan horse in the book. So let's talk about the early history of gullibility and how we began to understand it as society as something that's, you know, kind of a negative that's in the human DNA.
Well, there are some gullibility stories in the Bible. Probably the most famous of those is Samson and Delilah, where she tricked him into giving her the secret of his strength, his hair. And, I mean, gullibility is part of human nature. In fact, there are even some genetic evolutionary psychologists, who Richard Dawkins in particular, believes that gullibility is part of our DNA, that it keeps children from running into the jungle and getting eaten by lions, or crossing the street and getting run over, or touching hot stoves, because children are very attentive to whatever their caregivers, parents tell them to do or not to. And at some point, of course, as adults, that lessens, and gullibility can get us in big trouble. But for some people, they never get over it.
Absolutely. So now the question became in the book was, is gullibility unique to humans? This came early in the book for those that are keeping score at home, are reading the book, or have read the book, or will read the book. This is page 9. The use of and susceptibility to deception is not confined to human beings, so it is worth asking the question, is gullibility purely a human phenomenon? The answer is probably not, although the focus of this book obviously explains it, the human manifestation of it. But let's talk about gullibility as a whole, and again, as you know, why it continues to haunt us to a degree, right? So we don't learn from history. We repeat the same mistakes over and over. It's a human condition. Yeah. But gullibility as a whole is not unique to us. So let's talk about it in the world, in nature, how gullibility impacts our lives and makes it what it is today.
Well, Michael Pollan, who you know writes about botany and agriculture, had an insight while he was working in his garden that various organisms are gullible towards each other. For example, a bee is suckered by a plant into pollinating it. And in a sense, humans are suckered by plants into creating an environment where they, as a species, can survive. Of course, plants don't have consciousness. It's part of their DNA. But humans do have consciousness. Animals, to some extent, also.
Mm-hmm.
And I see gullibility as part of a larger issue, which I call foolishness, which really has to do with unawareness of risk or lack of sensitivity to risk, awareness of risk. So, for example, when we're gullible, we're insufficiently aware of the fact that someone or some group is trying to take advantage of us. They pretend to be our friends, but they're really not our friends. So most of us learn and don't repeat the same mistake twice. Some people are continue to be taken advantage of. I got into gullibility actually through my long-term interest in developmental disabilities. That's my area of research, and particularly social awareness, social intelligence. And people with disabilities are extremely vulnerable. That's why we do exploitation, whether it's financial or sexual or otherwise. And that's why we create conservatorships and guardianships to protect them from people out there who might want to harm them in some way. Now, for the most part, going along with others is a good strategy, and trusting others is a good strategy, but to survive in the world, we have to be aware of those situations where there are warning signs, and there usually are warning signs. Most of us learn to be aware of those warning signs. So some individuals, on the other hand, never acquire that ability.
So, Dr. Greenspan, you mentioned earlier, you mentioned the Bible, you mentioned the stories in the Bible. You talk about this in the book. Looking at pages 35, 36, Satan as manipulator of the gullible. And you talk about the old believers, Satan, which most people, including myself before I read this book, have never heard of this before, but it was a major part of history, major turning point in history, because it mandated an establishment of grammar schools and universal instruction in reading and writing. And the whole point of it, obviously, was to foil the attempts of the devil and obviously those kind of teachings and read actual scripture. So it was obviously a very religious aspect and intent to it. So was the colonies. It was not as secular as it was today. The reason they came here was to practice freely and do their own thing. But let's talk about that now and the stories that in the Bible that you found. You mentioned Samson before. Let's talk about the story of Satan, the great deceiver, and how many people that we have around us that are so manipulative and have that Satan in them, but we just can't seem to believe that that's what it is, that's what they have inside of them.
Yeah, I mean, we tend to, most of us are too polite to tell people that we don't trust them or that we suspect them. But there are manipulators out there. Now, it's interesting that education, we think of education, the purpose of schooling, to prepare us for the world of work or to be good citizens. But in the Massachusetts Bay Colony, the first schools were set up so that people could read the Bible, which would supposedly make them more susceptible or less susceptible to the wiles of Satan, the great deceiver. But, of course, I realize it's a sensitive topic, but most of us join the church or religious sect that our parents raised us in. And there are those who think of religion as or subservience to religion, following a religion as a form of gullibility. That was certainly the position of Richard Dawkins, who I talked about earlier, the evolutionary biologist. He once interviewed the chief rabbi in London. There was apparently some menthol that was used in cough drops, and he put a rabbi, an assistant rabbi, on a plane to China to find out if menthol is kosher, which he thought probably was, but he wanted to make sure. And so Dawkins asked him, what's the point of this silliness? And his answer was, if being a good Jew is just a matter of not killing somebody, that would be pretty easy. But in his view, to be a good Jew is to follow along with whatever rules and regulations they were told to follow along with. So in a sense, that's a form of gullibility.
Once again, speaking with Dr. Greenspan,
obedience, those are all virtues that are, or at least presumed virtues, but of course, it could lead us into hot water. Just look at all the political movements that have taken advantage of the gullibility of various followers of a particular demagogue, for example.
Once again, speaking with Dr. Stephen Greenspan, he's the author of The Annals of Gullibility, where we do and how to avoid it. Now, in the book, you also talk about the criminal justice system, which is always a hot topic issue, especially today. People think there's rampant racism in there, and you know, there's all these claims. Some of it is backed up by some facts, but for the most part, it's not. Just look at the studies, people. But there is gullibility within the system because it's run by humans, and humans, as you say, are gullible and we're infallible. So let's talk about the impact of gullibility, the traces of gullibility in the criminal justice system.
Yeah, well, actually, the criminal justice system had a very direct impact on my own interest and awareness of gullibility. I got involved in an advocacy group in Connecticut where I used to live for a man named Richard LaPointe who, over the course of a 10-hour interrogation, started confessing a crime that later turned out he didn't commit. And so the big question is, why would anybody confess to a crime he didn't commit? And for that reason, most people believe that, and that's why if you have a confession, you'll usually get a conviction, even if it later turns out that it was coerced or highly suspect. When I looked into this man who had a developmental brain impairment, something called Andy Walker syndrome, a form of hydrocephalus, turned out he was extraordinarily gullible as a child. And as an adult, he once went into a grocery store and asked where the bananas were. He was told there weren't any bananas, and he kept asking where the bananas were. Finally, the exasperated clerk said, go in the back room and pick them off the banana tree, and he went looking for the banana tree. So he would believe anything, and when police started telling him that they had evidence that he did this crime, he cracked. And they also threatened to have his child taken away from him, and he believed that they had that power. So I got interested in gullibility as an aspect of false confession, but also where you have a person with an intellectual disability convicted of a homicide, often they were sucked into the crime by a more competent confederate without necessarily really understanding what was going on. So that opened up my eyes to gullibility and the fact that within the disability field there was very little emphasis on gullibility. At one time there was, like back in the 19th century, but then when we developed IQ tests, which basically tap academic potential, we lost sight of the social intelligence aspect of it. And I started writing about this, and I'm proud to say that the intellectual disability field has cited my work quite a bit, and it's now part of the official definition or diagnostic process for people with intellectual disabilities. But, of course, it has much broader implications in just about every area you can think of, relationships, finance, and politics, so war. Mm-hmm. A lot of war, but the Trojan horse is based on gullibility. So
the book you talk about gullibility and finance relationships, obviously, then there's more common if anyone does a simple Google search on you, and obviously goes to your website, there's Bernard Madoff piece. So if you'd like to talk about that, that's up to you. I know you've talked about that at length.
I'd be happy to. It's having a little trouble hearing you, but I think I know what you said. My work went from being known only within academia to having much wider awareness, not just because I wrote the book, because it's a kind of an academic book, but because right after the book came out, I got a call from my broker who said that Bernie Madoff turned out to be running a Ponzi scheme. And of course my question was, who's Bernie Madoff and what does it have to do with me? And it turned out that he had to put my money in a hedge fund that turned it all over to Bernie Madoff. So I quickly started learning more about Ponzi schemes and financial gullibility than I originally was. I was not a major theme in my book. I did talk about tulip mania, which of course was a huge phenomenon in Holland a couple hundred years ago, where people would trade their houses for a rare tulip bulb, and eventually the whole thing crashed. you know, and there are other historic events in France, the Mississippi Manhattan on the South Sea Bubble, and, you know, also in America, but nothing like Madoff. And so I wrote a piece for Skeptic Magazine, which got picked up by Wall Street Journal and went somewhat viral. It came out only 3 weeks after the Madoff story broke. So the Madoff story broke around the 10th of December. I forget the year, 2005, I believe. And right after that, two days later, I found that I'd lost all this money. And 3 weeks later, I had a piece in the Wall Street Journal, and I started getting calls from radio stations, TV stations, newspapers all around the world, actually, not just in the United States, asking the question, or attempting to answer the question, how is it that smart people, even somebody wrote a book about gullibility, can be swindled by a con artist? And I had a theory in my gullibility book that I didn't really emphasize that much, but it's become the centerpiece of my work now. There are basically four factors that I use to explain why people, including myself, can be taken advantage of, can be gullible. And it's kind of ironic. I'm now considered an expert on Ponzi schemes. So a book just came on Ponzi schemes just came out in Australia, where there's a whole chapter devoted to my theory of financial gullibility, and I also have testified as an expert witness in some cases where individuals were swindled, and so it's become a little sideline of mine.
Now,
so I assume you'd like me to follow up and tell you what the four factors are.
Yeah, I would. Let's just get into that.
I'm sorry, I can barely hear you. You're like, you know.
Yeah, I was saying, I was just getting to that. I was hoping that you would provide those for the audience.
I'm sorry, you're asking me to talk about it now?
Yeah, please.
So there are four factors that explain any act of gullibility, including financial gullibility. Obviously, the importance of the factors vary according to the situation, according to the individual, and while it's true that gullibility is sort of a mass phenomenon, there are many people taken in by Madoff, the fact is there's still individual variation. Not everybody was taken in by Madoff. There are some people who are wise enough to say, wait a minute, there's something fishy here. But the four factors are situation, cognition, personality, and emotion. So the situation in a Ponzi scheme or in any investment media, many including legitimate ones, such as the real estate bubble in Japan or dot-com bubble in the United States, is that other people are making money and everybody's telling you how well they're doing. So we want to get on the bandwagon. And the Ponzi schemes tend to be what are called affiliation scams. That is, the con artists prey on people with similar ethnic characteristics. Charles Ponzi was a 1920 was an Italian immigrant, and most of his victims were Italian. Madoff was Jewish, and most of his, not all, but a lot of his, certainly early on, were mostly Jewish. We tend to trust our own kind, and if somebody has a good reputation, we think, well, this makes it legitimate. And in fact, in economics, Shiller wrote a book called Irrational Exuberance, which Alan Greenspan, no relation, the former Fed chairman, actually gave a speech talking about the real estate, the stock market is driven by irrational exuberance. So we tend to get carried away and don't realize there's a downside that sooner or later we're going to lose if we're not careful. Personality, some people are much more trusting than others. I happen to be a fairly trusting person. Cognition enters in, and that, you know, some of us have more knowledge than others. I don't know much about finance, which contributed to my trust. And then, of course, emotion enters in. in the case of money, emotion would be greed. In the case of somebody who gives a false confession, the emotion is fear. We're told that if we don't confess, we'll get the death penalty or we'll have our child taken away. So all these things taken together can cause us to put our skepticism on a shelf and behave very foolishly. That's part of the human condition. And some journalists once asked me, is billability a new thing? No, it's the oldest thing there is. It's part of our human nature, and it's never going to completely go away. But that's why we have laws, and that's why we learn from experience, hopefully.
Yep, and it's unfortunate that you had to learn, obviously, and become an expert on the credibility of finance because of what happened to you. So, but luckily, you're able to pass on your knowledge, your experience. Again, it's unfortunate, but I guess that's life. If we want to be crass about it. But I know you have you're working on another book, the Anatomy of Foolishness. If you want to talk about that, let us know what's going on there, what we could expect, and when.
Yes. As I said earlier, gullibility is a subtype of foolishness. It's a form of social foolishness that's induced by other people. But this social foolishness that's not induced, somebody making a bad joke, for example, to the wrong audience or at the wrong time can cause him to lose his job or get in trouble. And then there's physical foolishness. Smoking a cigarette next to a gas can in an enclosed car could cause you to get killed, you know. Or people in wilderness areas often expose themselves to extreme risk by not taking proper precautions. So I'm exploring in various ways, from the serious to the humorous. For example, Seinfeld show, a lot of sitcoms, but Seinfeld's in particular, is basically all about human foolishness. And of course, the most foolish character in the show is Kramer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, pretty much every show he does something foolish because he's not aware of the risk, such as going into Jerry's apartment to eat a sandwich while there was a sign saying fumigations, keep out, or changing the lines on a highway that he adopted without realizing that he was going to create crashes, or just go on burning a Puerto Rican flag on Puerto Rican Day, getting attacked by a crowd. I mean, just one thing after another. Foolishness is all around us. Certainly the current political situation in the United States is a good example of that.
Absolutely. Dr. Greenspan, I appreciate you coming on and all the work that you've done in helping us better understand gullibility and foolishness. We're going to have the opportunity to talk again about foolishness and when that book is ready and comes out. But again, thank you for coming on tonight, and thank you for sharing your experiences and your research with us.
You're very welcome. I appreciate your asking me. Goodbye.
Thank you so much. Okay.